When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So the football gods have answered our prayers. It is a May Day in New England. And I will say, too, they have answered my prayers because as I texted our next guest, Mike Girardi, the Boston Sports Journal, NFL reporter, I have stopped chasing girls for less than the BS I put up with from you over the last week or two, rescheduling, postponing, not hearing. I wanted you on. You know, this is about every 6 weeks or so, but we finally got you here. We got our man.
You know, it's interesting because for years and years and years with my phone, like, I don't keep texts. Like, you text me, the moment I think the conversation is over, I delete it because I like order, right? There's too many things going on, and I don't know when I changed, but I think in the last 2 months, I have like nine. It just goes and it goes and it goes, and it's like right now I'm kind of shaking. I want to delete, but I'm not. But I think you kind of got, sometimes if I don't answer right away, it just gets lost in the flood.
Yeah, you're very popular, Mike. That was very.
I think most of them are telling me to go screw myself. You know, like, you know, family, friends. You know.
Those are also me. Just in between. True. On the podcast. Also, sounds very suspicious. What are you deleting? What are you hiding here in your phone?
No, I literally don't. It's like the same thing with emails. You have like a lot of emails in your files. I the moment it's done. If I don't need to save it for like a future date or time or thing, gone, right to the trash. I want the inbox to be as small as possible.
But there's reading texts. I can't believe the Patriots are a franchise quarterback and we're delving into your text. I can't let you off the hook here. You don't just read them. You then actively delete them?
As soon as I feel like the conversation is over. Like, for instance, I'm going back and forth with a friend of mine. We're talking about a potential wide receiver being traded to the Patriots. We're going back and forth. And now it's been like 10 minutes. The conversation's over. That conversation is then deleted. It's over. I don't need to see. I got to reduce structure.
So
I need order.
You can't go through any of your old texts because they're gone.
Correct.
That's insane to me. I can't tell you how many times I've needed an address or something a source told me or the grocery list my wife left me because I'd forgotten it. And I told her I wouldn't, but then I did. And I needed to go back through old texts. That is wild to me. Okay.
If any of that stuff is important, if someone says something, hey, I got a quote about Drake May, screenshot, save, goes into the...
Maybe I should get it on the grocery list. Okay, let's get to the stuff people really care about.
Drake was important.
Number three overall pick, we have talked about him. We have praised him. We have broken him down over the last 3-4 months. So we're not going to do a whole lot of that. This is a look ahead. And because we're recording Friday morning, we're not going to talk a lot about day two picks that we want to see the Patriots make. Because by the time you listen to them, the Patriots will or won't have made them. So we'll do a little day three sneak peek and then get you out of here. But May, right off the top, what do you grade this pick?
It's an A. I think that, I mean, look, I think you've been in the same camp. I've been team quarterback the whole time. I really started diving into it in November when it became clear that they were going to have a very high pick. And, you know, obviously went back and watched his tape as a redshirt freshman. It's glorious. This year wasn't as the same high level, but again, they lost 181 targets. There's all kinds of stuff that went into it that we've talked about quite a bit. But I just think he makes the most sense. If you're going to be picking at three, and you're desperate for a quarterback, he has every single trait that you want. And if you watch closely enough, you've seen him do everything an NFL quarterback needs to do. You've seen it on the tape. Now, it hasn't been as consistent as you would like. He's 21 years old. That's why Alex Van Pelt, T.C. McCartney, we don't fully know what Ben McAdoo is going to do, but I would gather he's going to be somewhat involved with quarterbacks. Like, that's their job now. He is your project. Make sure that the footwork gets cleaned up, that he speeds up his decision making, and that he's ready to go I don't know, 6 weeks from now, 6 months from now, whatever it is, whatever you deem the timetable. I know they don't want to put timetables on it. But whatever you need to get him ready, take that time and get him ready. You have Jacoby Brissett. You have Bailey Zappe. Like, there should be no rushing this kid. When he's ready to go, you put him in there.
This is cruel to Jacoby Brissett, but because you and I text, if you remember, since there's no evidence of this, about the Sopranos here and then, he's Uncle June, season one. Jacoby Brissett is here to take the hits. He's the lightning rod on top. And until he can't take the hits anymore or the Patriots are ready to promote Drake May, you know, that's what he'll do. So that is the beauty of the situation. I think mentioning that he's 21 is something that needs to be said more, because we've talked about the trades. I'm all in on him. Again, no quarterback prospect is perfect. None of them are really even consistent at this point. But you bet on the kid with the tape that he's shown at 21 to be that much better at 25 and go, oh, you're still going to play for 10 to 12 years, provided we don't break you this early. I'm giving it an A. I don't think I really need to explain that much more. What do you think, though, in your conversations with the team and maybe other people around the league, aside from the fact this was a great quarterback class, the Patriots had a top three pick, one of those quarterbacks was available and looked a lot like quarterbacks that executives from the Green Bay tree, like Elliott Wolf, have drafted in the past? All of that obvious stuff aside, what do you think ultimately led them to know, supposedly weeks ago, they were going to take Drake May?
I think it's a combination of things. I think they talked about, you know, Gerard mentioned it yesterday, right? Like talking to Mack Brown about Drake and some of the conversations that I've had with people around the North Carolina program. And it's like, this kid has that little sort of that magnetic personality. He draws people to him. He, you know, as Elliott mentioned last night, he elevated. That was not a good group last year. I can't stress that enough. It's the same conversation we had about Caleb Williams. Like, people are like, oh, Caleb's, you know, this year wasn't as good as last year. Drake's this year wasn't as good as last year. They weren't surrounded by much at all. It became a situation where, you know, defense is terrible. You had to make, or they felt like they had to make the big play all the time. And it was the only way they were going to stay in game. So I, you know, look, that does that breed some bad habits? Absolutely. But I just think you talk to them, not getting down about the situation, you know, not getting frustrated by the fact that it didn't look the same and that people started to talk about him in a different way than they had the year prior, you know, where even in September, we're still talking, it's Caleb and it's Drake and it's Caleb. And then, you know, that separation started to happen a little bit and people started to nitpick his game and it didn't faze him. So I think all those things and all those conversations, I think really firmed up their idea of, this is the kind of guy that's going to be able to take a lot of grief here, which is he's going to invariably get, and it's not going to break him down. And again, Elliott mentioned last night, right? Like, this isn't the North Carolina media. This isn't Chapel Hill. It'll be different. Sports radio is going constantly. You know, you make one bad throw, they'll ride you for months about it. But like, it feels like he has himself in a good position from a mental strength standpoint to handle all that stuff. And I think we found out that not only are the physical skills important, but that stuff is important as well.
And you hit on it there, you know, well, a couple of things there. But the first part is the magnetism, right? And I'm not talking about like a guy who's going to crush every first date that he goes on. I'm talking about a guy that other players want to be with. And Jerod Mayo said at the owners' meetings, hey, we need more of them. We need more magnets in our locker room to draw in free agents where we don't have to convince Calvin Ridley and Calvin Ridley's wife, not girlfriend, Robert Kraft, come on down here because, you know, we have more than just money. We have dudes. Drake May, you know, this is all projection, of course. He's a prospect. He's 21. Projects to be that kind of guy. And you got a little glimpse of that personality, even on the Zoom call, which granted, those are, you know, softballs, like easiest things to knock out of the park. But he did. You got a sense of that. Was also a captain in North Carolina. The second part was the toughness. And that was something that Mayo said when asked specifically, hey, what was it on tape that you saw? And you were like, okay, I'm sold. And he mentioned how quickly he got back up from getting drilled. And so that toughness part, granted, there were stories, some that I wrote too, about Mac Jones losing half a tooth in college during getting back up. So he can get back up. But it reminded me of Elliott Wolf. The first thing he said about this quarterback class was, I don't know much yet. We have to meet with them. But I love that they're all tough guys. Caleb, Jaden, Drake, May. I think that was a commentary on what eventually melted with Mac, right? In the locker room, the fits, everything we saw. But also where Elliott comes from. Brett Favre made 279 consecutive starts, most of which in Green Bay, that he saw as a kid. I think that was formative in the same way that he looked and said, we need to get a guy with arm talent. a guy who can create, who can rip these throws. And so that was a big sticking point to me of like, if he checked those boxes and you feel like you can fix the footwork, they're like, he's got the makeup that we need in addition to all the obvious stuff that we just pushed off the table to start this conversation.
Yeah, and I had someone when I wrote up at the beginning of the week, somebody said to me about the footwork thing. They're like, and it was pointed at the coaches. They're like, if you can't fix this, then you shouldn't be doing this. Like, to their point, it's like, it'll take some refinement because you start to get into those habits and then your feet naturally start to do those things and you have to sort of retrain yourself. But like, if Alex Van Pelt is what people tell me he is, if TC McCartney is what they tell me he is, then they should be able to correct that in due time, you know, and that should make a big difference in terms of some of the erratic natures of his throws and whatnot.
Okay, so I know we talk a lot about the draft in this podcast. It's a football podcast. It's a Patriots podcast. What else are we going to do until April 25th? Well, let me tell you, soon enough, we are going to turn our attention to the Celtics and Bruins because they're getting in on the playoff action. And so can you with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where right now you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks with basketball, hockey, and other sports on Prize Picks. And I'll tell you, look, I like Prize Picks for baseball too. The Red Sox just started up. They're playing the Mariners, the A's. I put a little money down and I got a lot more money back. So download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. I did the same. Again, download the app today. Use code CLNS at PrizePicks for a first deposit match up to $100, and you can do the same. Basketball, hockey, and baseball. We got a lot to do until the draft, and you can find it all at PrizePicks.
What else did you unearth just around the league before, you know, we kind of move on here with May? Because I think it's interesting. There's a lot of the context is interesting. Like, I just drew the contrast between him and Mac, and these are lessons learned, right? And supposedly the lessons they've learned, though we'll need to see them put this into action, is, oh, you should probably support the young quarterback mm-hmm. on the rookie contract, stuff we talked about before, and they intend to do that. Elliott again saying we need weapons, we need to shore up the offensive line, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, what are other people saying about May, or did you learn that – whose opinions you trust?
Well, just a couple of things that jump out to me. First of all, and it's not that this is – I'm not uncovering any new information, but both the Giants and the Vikings like Drake May. They wanted to get up to 3 to get Drake May. Brian Daboll has a pretty good track record with quarterbacks. And, in fact, I know last year didn't go great with Daniel Jones, but the year before he coached Daniel Jones to his best season and got Daniel Jones paid. Now, they may regret that. Nonetheless, that's what happened, and obviously he was a huge force behind Josh Allen taking a dramatic leap in Buffalo. And in Minnesota and Kevin O'Connell, like, when people talk about offensive minds in the league, obviously Kyle Shanahan is here. And now you have somebody like Slowick, who's like, there's some different – but Kevin O'Connell is thought to be right up there. And if Kevin O'Connell was enamored with Drake May and his skill set, I think you should be encouraged by that this owner, this group, this conglomerate here trying to come up with a collaborative effort at least understood, like, hey, the strengths of this kid are so high that, yeah, there are some flaws, but if we can fix those, then we have a top 10 quarterback. And I think that's one of the things that kept coming out over and over again is like, look, if they get this kid right, if they support him, he's a top 10 quarterback. And guess what? In this league, you're not winning without one. So that right away, if you can get him there, put you in a conversation like right now for the Bills, for instance, you know, they turned over a good part of their roster. They don't have their best receiver anymore. They traded Stephon Diggs. Mitch Morse is a great center. They cut him. They had to do all these different things. And they look at it and say, well, maybe we're not going to reach the heights of the last couple of years where we were in the mix for a title, but we'll still be in the mix for a title because we have Josh Allen, because he can elevate everybody around him. And that is what, if Drake May hits his ceiling, if they do the job that they think they can do with him, then that's the potential for a ceiling for you. And then you're always in the conversation because you have that piece.
You are. I'm so glad you brought up Kevin O'Connell too, because – did you see his interview? I think it was at a church.
Yes.
He's speaking about God and faith and Jesus and, you know, your purpose and your path. And then someone comes up to ask a question, and this large congregation is like, I want to talk football. And I don't know why I just gave this man a Minnesota accent that sounds like he's not from Minnesota. But the point was that clip went viral. He's talking about footwork is fixable. You know, certain stuff, you know, has made me the quarterback killer. Like, now he's talking about death in church. in not in a kind way, of just like, I don't want to take quarterbacks. And that's how people know me in the Vikings facility, because I just keep saying, no. Clearly he said yes. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's wrong. Maybe we're all wrong about Drake May. But the point about footwork and the example you also gave about Brian Daboll, the way he fixed Daniel Jones was the decision making. Now, some guys are just committed to living their lives, as Josh Allen seemed to be in 2018, 2019. Jaden Daniels running and playing chicken with every defender in his path. But if you can tweak that, if you can change that, cut down the interceptions, the Giants made the playoffs with Daniel Jones. So those two guys who know what they're looking at and then know how to fix it, both identified separately. Drake May is someone who they could work with. Obviously, that didn't happen. And it only matters what Alex Van Pelt believes and what he can do. And we don't know what that looks like with Drake May. Mm-hmm. It just gives you, I think, rightfully, fairly, a little bit more confidence that this is going to work out. Though I will say, when you rattle off those names, McAdoo and T.C. McCartney, there's a small part of me that's, oh, that's right. That's the offensive staff in New England now that a couple months ago we were poo-pooing. I love the pick. I think he's the modern quarterback prospect. It's not going to be perfect. We don't know a timeline yet. The pressure is going to come. But he feels like a kid just kind of ready to meet the moment in a way that you need someone, especially given everything they just went through with Matt.
And I would say, too, that, and this is, I bring this up in the comparison to Allen. And look, he's compared himself to Allen and, you know, whatever. Is he not? But I think the point being for me is Allen started 12 games his rookie year. He wasn't the opening day starter. They were going to take their time with him. But eventually they decided after 4 weeks, they put him in. He completed 52% of his passes. And having covered that team and covering the future teams, and then he went to 59 in his second year, and then he made the huge leap in year three. But what you saw on 52% in that first year was there were flashes. Every game, there'd be a throw or two, or there'd be an athletic play or an escape in the pocket or a run. And you go, all right, I see why they picked him high. And then in year two, when he makes that a decent leap, but not like, you know, still had to go another level to go, you saw more consistency to it, right? It was okay. Now he's making these throws more consistently. Now he's also making the smarter play more consistently. Let's keep refining this. And then in year three, you know, to the moon. And that's where he's been ever since. And that's where I think people, and I think it's not only externally from the fan base, but hopefully internally, they understand and they keep their eyes on the prize and the plan. And that is, like, it's not going to be perfect. He's probably not going to jump in right away and be CJ Stroud. And that's okay. That doesn't mean he's a bust. Work with it. And I think he, because of the age and because of some of the inexperience, that it will take a little bit of time. And you just have to sort of live with it, deal with it. I know I've heard people complain about the idea that, oh, it's, you know, they'd be wasting 2 years of their rookie contract. I don't care. And they shouldn't either, because bottom line is, if by year three he turns out to have that leap like Josh did, then you're going to be happy writing out the big check. You won't worry about that one bit. You know what? It took until year three, but we found our guy. We know he's our guy, and we'll write him the check, and, you know, we'll put a statue up for him later on. Whatever it needs to be, we've got it done. That's all they got to think about.
That's a problem you want to have, too. Right. And the idea that you can't win while paying a quarterback, hello, Patrick Mahomes. Look right at the Eagles now since the Jalen Hurts has been paid. And A.J. Brown gets now to become the richest receiver. The Eagles haven't won a Super Bowl. But I think 29 other teams in the league would take going to one, making the playoffs on either side of that appearance, and looking at the roster going, yeah, we'll be back. Like, we just don't need a cascade of injuries. Otherwise, we'll be back in the playoffs. Yep. I do want to talk about Bill Belichick for a second, though, because your Josh Allen point that it was in 2020 he finally made this unprecedented leap, yep, but to becoming a perennial MVP contender was something that was not lost on anybody, really, except for Belichick at the end, when we all know before that Monday night game in December, the Patriots season is lost, he is poo-pooing Josh Allen as MVP candidate. And this isn't to bring up old bleep, just to bring up old bleep. It's to say that Bill, as he viewed Josh Allen then, would not have drafted Drake May based on his comments last night in the Pat McAfee Draft Spectacular, which is a great show, good appearance by Bill. His comments about what he looked for in a quarterback, decision-making, accuracy, reading coverages. He didn't mention any of that with May. What he did mention is that Drake will make all of the throws, which we know is Belichick speaking. Yes. And the one comment he did make about reading coverages, he needs to do that better. But, and we have to do this because everything about your next is compared to your ex, right? And these are our next, Elliott Wolf and Rod Mayo. This is the contrast. It doesn't ultimately matter, but this is interesting to me. May is a traits-based prospect, a high-ceiling guy, an upside, a big swing. And the players that Belichick ultimately, in the end, could not contain, could not defend, even with the perfect call in the coverage, were players who were just like this. Top 10 quarterbacks or first-round quarterbacks with exceptional skill sets, clay that needed to be molded, right? Who could break out into backyard ball, even against those calls, and still beat you. Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, right? And granted, these are some of the best quarterbacks in the league. No one can defend them particularly well. But that's the starting point here with May. He looks like, plays like, feels like the best quarterbacks in the league. And so Belichick not wanting him, to me, is interesting because, again, we're going to do the comparison point, but I think misses what ultimately wins now. And even against the best defensive coaches, it's guys you need to develop and take time with and take risks on. And I've done a 180 because I used to just believe everything he did. Yeah, Mac Jones can work. He's accurate, works from the pocket. That's it. That's not all that matters anymore. The arm talent and the playmaking are paramount in today's game. And it's just something to keep in mind.
Well, I mean, just look at the last 4 years of the Belichick reign and the Cam Newton experiment, which was, I mean, he couldn't throw. And yet every chance he got, he reminded us he's the starting quarterback and that he was doing everything they asked him to do. And then Mac, you know, obviously the fifth quarterback of five, and people make a big deal of that. Look, you can get the right quarterback wherever. I don't, you know, like if you do a good job scouting, they may have screwed up ahead of you and you end up with the fifth guy turns out to be the best guy. He was the best guy in year one, but there was a ceiling to him as a player athletically. And then there was this unwillingness from Bill's perspective to do more for him. And we know we've talked about their relationship, it fractured and the whole thing, but like Bill doesn't see it that way. I kept talking about this over the last 2 years, much to the dismay of some Pats fans. Like the arrogance in the scheme and their coaching ability partially doomed the whole thing. Because it turns out, no, you do need a talented player at quarterback. It helped having a generational guy in Tom Brady, right? The best maybe ever. Like, so don't tell me it was because of your coaching. Like, yes, it helped build him up. You don't do all that you did without Bill and Tom, right? We, again, don't want to have that argument, but like he got so arrogant about it that the game changed and he didn't really change with it. And, oh, great, my defense is still good, but your offense is pathetic. It can't get out of its own way. Couldn't get out of its own way, not only for 4 years, but for Brady's last year as well. So, like, you know, what are we doing? When Bill talks about quarterbacks, whatever, bud.
I'm not that far, but no, I will just say this. To your point, quarterbacks are not the cog in the system. Okay? They're much closer to being the system. Yeah. And that is where I think the gap in understanding and what we've seen from the game the last few years, the power, the influence, and control quarterbacks have over these games. Terry Bradshaw, Joe Namath were winning Super Bowls touchdowns years and years and years ago. That's never, of course, going to fly anymore. And I think that's the year I would have traded back. Again, we don't know what Bill would have done. We don't even know, again, if Drake May is going to succeed. But I think if you're taking a pick and a swing in the way that the Patriots are, you bet on the guy who makes the plays that very few people on planet Earth can and try to raise the rest of his game. Because when it comes down to the two-minute warning, when it comes down to the fourth quarter of a playoff game, those dudes win. And we've seen it. Again, yep. Lamar Jackson versus Patrick Mahomes in the AFC Championship game. Patrick Mahomes might be the greatest quarterback ever, but Josh Allen is who he is because of what the Bills did drafting him and then developing him and who he was coming into that building, even if most around the league, self included, didn't see it. And May is cut from a very, very similar cloth. Okay. We hit on enough Bill, who again was good on McAfee. Period, end of the story over there. Elliot Wolf in dry mail. We still haven't heard a ton from them, right? Like it's only been a couple of press conferences, but aside from the stuff that we did hear, what were your takeaways from what they shared right after the pick when they met with the media?
Well, my impression, and it's a growing impression of Elliot, is that he is in command. And you and I were talking about this before we started. I feel like he sees everything. It's almost, there's a calmness and yet a little bit of cockiness, but not like over the top. Like I know it took me a long time to get to this seat, and I know you guys are worried about me being a first time GM and maybe I'm out of my league. He doesn't project that image at all. He just to me, it's my confidence in him grows every time I hear him speak, because I just feel like he's got it together. He has an idea of what he wants. He has a good idea of what he wants to do. He has a plan, and he's in the process of executing it. You know, whether there's patience with him from up above, whether they have the right coach, like all these things remain to be, whether the quarterback turns out to be the guy that they hope he can be, like all these things remain to be seen. But I think of all the big figures in the Patriots organization here over the last few months since the moving on of Bill Belichick, the Crafts have not had the best time. Gerard has had some verbal slip-ups, which he's just going to have to learn. Like, we're going to analyze everything he says. And then Elliott has been steady Eddie. Like, he says the right things. I think it's been very impressive to watch.
I agree. I said this last episode, and obviously I wrote the profile I did, which ended up being glowing, not because of, you know, an attitude I had going into it. It was what the feedback I got talking from close to 20 people who know him very, very well, or have a viewpoint within the league as GMs, former GMs, of what the job takes, the skill set you need, and what he's made of. And I'm an Elliott Wolf believer, and GMs are going to miss picks. The Patriots could miss on their second and third round pick here today. But if you hit at the top, that matters so much more. Okay, like the Celtics hit on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I don't care. You know, you go back, RIP, Fab Mello, or any of the mid-round picks, or the kid from Indiana who busted out and they sent him to San Antonio and he hasn't.
Neesmith,
Romeo
Langford.
Romeo Langford, thank you. Like, the pick at the top matters so much more. I think he made the right decision. I think he bet on the right things. Again, I think his experience informed him in Green Bay of what that can look like, what you can win with. Yeah, I just trust him. Like, it's 30 years of growing up in this stuff. He's exceptionally smart. And there is that little bit of, you know, even talking to his parents, Ron and Edie, like this self-assuredness. Like, it's a family trait of just everything is a little bit simpler than you think or feel in your life. This is what it is. This is why. And that's it. And they're open to being wrong. But that kind of conviction and belief is contagious, even for a guy who would honestly prefer just to sit in a dark room and scowl versus be a galvanized GM. That's not who he is. He's not going to throw parties. Like, I think, you know, I mentioned the story Dave Ziegler did in his brief time as a GM. But you know what? I would take good draft picks over big parties. And I think he's going to do the former. They talked about, you know, a couple of things there too, as far as not anointing Drake May, the starting quarterback. Do you have an issue with that?
No, he's got to come and earn it. Like, and he knows it. Like I said, they had the conversation with him. I think that, and Gerard did mention, he's like, you know, like Bill used to say, like, it's, you're coming in to compete, you know, like, it's great that you had this position. You're a first round pick, but like, all right, now come show us that you deserve to play. And that's the one thing about, and we, you know, I think we've heard some things from Julian Edelman since he's come over to the media about, and I think it was directed at N'Keal Harry, right? Like, they draft a guy in the first round and like, you can see traits. Like, I can sit there and say, like, I'm just a football player. I'm not a scout, but like, oh, I see why they drafted him in the first round. And he'd be like, what does he do well exactly? What's the, you know? So I think that he's going to have to prove it to his teammates and the coaching staff at the same time. But I think the point is of, you know, the competitive nature of this kid, hates to lose. He said that to us last night, but that's something that I'd heard from everybody and talking to him about him leading up to the process and the competitor that he is. Like, I think these things will serve him well in this situation. Like, okay, did I get that wrong? I got it wrong. How do I fix it? Let's fix it right now so that I don't do it again. I think those are sort of certain things that he's going to have because, look, it's not going to. We're going to see it. We'll see it in camp. We'll see it in preseason games. There'll be moments that look awful. And, you know, how does he handle it and how does he grow from it? And how does he make sure that doesn't happen again or happen like it did before? You know, like, let's tweak it. It's cleaned it up a little bit. You know, like, that's the making that progress.
Yeah, and I don't think we'll go through training camp where we count the first deep completion for Mac Jones a couple weeks into training camp. Like, Drake May is going to hit some early. And that doesn't mean, he's going to succeed. I want to make that very clear. I believe in him. I believe in Elliott Wolf. I could be very wrong here. And this is going to be a slow, painful climb, at least through the next season. But when you look at his attitude, like, I think you need to understand everyone's going to say, I hate to lose. I want to win. I'm here to win. We're going to do that. He comes off more as a maniac in the way that Brady was a maniac, right? Or the best athletes are in that way. If competitiveness is stitched into the fabric of your character, and like there's no pulling that out of you, there's no giving up in that. You would rather go crazy chasing something you're never going to have than kind of give up and keep your sanity. That seems like Drake May. And that's something that, again, matters in a locker room, especially when winning will be out of reach. It was last year. And we saw how they responded and folded and lost and leaked confidence as far as the quarterback went. And that devastated the whole program. That's not going to happen with this kid, who might not succeed for other reasons, but it won't be that kind of competitive spirit and toughness, which, again, all sounds like fluff, but really effing matters when you're getting batted around in a way that we've seen Patriots quarterbacks the last couple of years, and Drake May probably will be moving forward. All right, looking ahead, day three. So we're talking fourth round, fifth round, sixth round, seventh round. A couple of guys that you really like that you can safely say will still be on the board and you hope the Patriots take.
Not that it's a massive area of need. I really love Tyrone Tracy, running back, Purdue. 1 year as a running back, had been a wide receiver prior to. You know, again, he fits sort of in the mold of he would be a receiving back first and foremost. But like, look, when you look at Gibson's contract, it's really a 1 year deal. There are outs to get out of that after one. So it's not as if they're, and obviously Ramondre, even though we feel like they're going to try to extend him, that hasn't been done yet. So he's in the last year of his deal. So it would make sense to invest in that position, even though, again, it's probably not your biggest need, but he's just one of those guys. Will Shipley's another one at running back that I just sort of, same thing, more of a third down back. Audric Estime, the running back from Notre Dame. If you're looking for more of a first and second down guy, he had the terrible testing day at the combine, much better pro day. But if you watch his tape, like his tape is fast. So I don't, 4.7, 4.51, whatever it was, like his tape is faster than that. And he definitely would be more of a first and second down guy. It's funny, the number of receivers in this class, and you've had as many as 19, from different people that you talk to, 19 in the top 100. Now, some of those are slot only guys, so that sort of winnows your focus. I don't really love the 4 through 7 crew. Like, it's sort of a dart throw. It's a name that's come up quite a bit. Bub Means from Pittsburgh. There's a connection with Tyquan Underwood, who coached him at Pittsburgh. Like, he might be a guy just based on traits, even though there's not a ton of production. I think he had like 40 something catches last year for Pittsburgh, that maybe you'd say, okay, like, sixth round, seventh round, throw a dart, and maybe like Pop Douglas, he hits for you at some point.
It wouldn't be a like, Patriots draft podcast without a Bub Means mention. So thank you for playing bingo at all.
Seriously, someone was like, you're just reading from the same list. I'm like, dude, there's too many things here to not connect the two. Like, never mind the conversations. Like, Tyquan likes him. Like, is he going to have some influence here and say, hey, like, if it's between these two guys, I know this kid, I know his makeup, let's bet on that. Versus the kid that we don't know as much about, that we don't have any experience coaching. Trying to think, I like a couple of the safeties. A kid from Texas Tech.
Yes.
The kid from TCU, Perry, who might be an under. I mean, he's like borderline. I mean, whatever. It depends. On
what. Like, two out of four guys should run 4.4 in this class, and the Patriots don't need any more box safeties. So I'm with you there. I'm going to throw you a couple names. Luke McCaffrey, receiver out of Rice. Converted from quarterback 3-4 years ago. Obviously, the NFL bloodlines tested exceptionally well. That's a dude, like a lot of these guys, if you recently changed positions or you came into football late, and if you test well, I'm betting on the development that's ahead of you. I don't even care if you're 23 or 24. Like, give me a couple of years more to see what you can do in a sport that you're still coming to learn and grasp. And that's a guy I want to bet on, especially fourth or fifth round. Like, there's a bet at number three where you could lose your life savings, right? Like, or your job. There's significant downside there. The fifth round bet is, I have 20 bucks. I could go get food at the casino. I'm just going to go sit down and throw it anyway. And if not, I'll just pay with my card. Dwight McLaughlin, who's a corner out of Arkansas. I've been on him early, 6'3", ball skills for days. Didn't test great, but I think he's one of these 4 or 5 corners that can get away with it because of his length, his attitude, the natural ball skills that come with that. I think he's a little, I don't want to say like creaky in the hips, right? But like, can use a little bit of oil in there. In SEC competition, LSU transfer, I like him a lot. And I talk about this guy, Jalix Hunt, out of Houston Christian, an edge who could go in that round. He visited, had a top 30 with the Patriots. Just a 30, excuse me.
Don't say top 30.
Yeah.
Makes the football nerds mad.
But that's it. Just a couple guys to keep in mind.
I was trying to think a couple other ones. DeCameron Richardson, who they've had a visit with, Mississippi State corner.
Yep.
Big, suppress man kind of guy. Like, makes it difficult on receivers. Maybe not as sticky as some guys, but, like, because of the range that he has, the size, he can close some of that gap. I love Austin Booker. Now, he's a pass rusher from Kansas.
I think he's going today.
Yeah, I was having this conversation with people, and it's like, Bub Means. I had someone tell me Bub Means, for them, was a third rounder. Oh, and then I had someone else. No, I'm
was
just.
Was this Alex, like, Barth? Was this our
It's just funny, like, the because everybody's board's different. Like, everybody wants it to be like, well, this is what the consensus mocks say. Like, but everybody's board is so different. Like, who knows what they value as a trait, you don't, vice versa. Gerald Wiley, who's the big tight end from TCU, 6'6". Now, again, he could be a third rounder. He could be a sixth rounder. Like, there's a wide sort of, for all these tight ends, there seems like there's a pretty wide range of outcomes. But, like, if you watch that kid move, I mean, damn. And he used to be a quarterback. Like, I don't know, just one of those sort of intriguing dudes that hasn't played the position a ton. He's a competent blocker. He's willing to do it. Like, he's not great at it, but he's not Mike Gesicki. And I don't mean that in a positive way for Gesicki. So, like, those are guys, like, that they're interesting. That there's some traits, there's some ability, maybe, you know, like, hey, look, how many more good years do we get out of Hunter? Is it one? Is it two? Draft a developmental tight end, and maybe that guy can come in and, you know, a couple years from now and be a player for you. So I like some of those guys.
All right. Well, everyone obviously just memorized that list, so we can move on. Last question, because I've been complaining a little bit to my pal Doug Kide, who completely co-signs in the complaining. And I said, you know, someone who would also co-sign on any complaints, because I keep your texts. I see them when you initiate, and they're often in that same form of communication. It's just the reporting in this year's silly season. I don't know if it's because I cover a team that had a top three pick, was looking at quarterbacks, you know, a little bit more high profile being the Patriots than, let's say, the Jaguars or the Panthers or whomever else. I was so sick of the buzz and the noise. Yeah. And this is someone who does mock drafts, who will pass around things that I hear on this podcast because it's a safe space. But it is so much waste of time and energy and regurgitation of this team might trade up, that team might trade back. They've made calls about this. They want to find – everyone makes calls. Everyone has interest. Everyone is throwing smoke screens. So I want to know the lessons so I don't get so frustrated. And the folks at home don't have to deal with the BS or certain Twitter accounts. Pretty Ricky had a pretty ugly day, let's just say, last night about, oh, the Patriots are going to trade back and trade J.J. McCarthy. Yeah. J.J. McCarthy supposedly being pushed hard for by Elliot Wolf, according to Tony Pauline, who I documented on this podcast, has a bad track record reporting on quarterbacks around the draft. No more, Tony Pauline. That's it. I'm sorry. You work very hard. I don't know you at all. I don't want to hear in early April about where quarterbacks are going to go from you anymore. Those are my two lessons. What can we add to this just for the people as I calm down? Because we have to go see Drake May and Robert Kraft.
I'll just say this, and you and I were texting. I was so ready for this for day one. Like, I couldn't take it anymore. Like, it started to give me anxiety. And, like, I don't care. Like, it's not my life doesn't depend on it. This isn't one of my kids getting into college or, you know, what, like, it's not that important. And the grand scheme of things, it's not that important. And I'm like, I can't take it anymore. I can't take the noise. I can't take this. People arguing with me about that's stupid. Why would they do this? I'm like, man, I just like the player. I don't care what you think anymore. Like, I would say this as we got on, I would say probably the last, because I really hit it about 2 weeks ago where I was just like, I've had enough. I started muting pretty much everybody on my timeline. Like, I kept it down to Andrew Callahan, you survived. You remained on my timeline.
You didn't delete me. You didn't erase me somehow. No. And all of our
Daniel Jeremiah remained on my timeline.
Well, let me say this, because this sounds like we're pivoting to a Twitter conversation. I don't want to just complain about Twitter. Like, you kept me, you kept Daniel Jeremiah. I assume you kept Ione Rufini, yes? Okay,
no.
Yes. Well, let me say this, because to add to this and to kind of dismount here, because we got to go. She had reported on Monday, Jonathan Graff was heavily involved. Now, let's say, again, Diana contributes a lot of the reporting I just talked about. Teams can move up, mm-hmm. They can go back. That makes me annoyed. I trust her, the track record, the hard work she puts in. Yep. Full stop. That's my feelings toward Diana as a reporter and a very, very nice person. you know and have said a 98.5 that Jonathan Kraft, according to other teams, volunteered this information to you, was involved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, there is some signal, real stuff that matters, that we can separate from the noise, which is all the stuff I was just yelling about. And what I would say is, trust the reporters who have the track record of giving you signals in the past. Not the retweets, not the aggregation accounts, not the Pretty Rickies of the world, not other folks who kind of pop up this time of year and get a lot of attention. I would just say trust the reporting. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. I also think that as a message, we should, next time we see Fitzy, we should put him in a headlock because he was retreating some of these people, including Pretty Ricky. And we love Fitzy. Don't do that to us again.
Fitzy looked pretty last night, speaking of which. The man was in a tie, I think, for the first time I've ever seen him. He didn't have a ball.
No baseball hat? What?
No, at the Patriots pre-draft party. I was like, damn.
I saw him one time at an airport at like 6 a.m. and he didn't have a hat on. I was like, what? I don't think I've ever seen you without a hat on. I think he left it in his hotel room or something. You know,
yeah, we all did.
Might have been a rough night.
You have not been the worst, so we might have you back. I don't know how many emails or DMs or texts I'm going to have to make.
Oh, it was like two. You just don't be so sensitive.
No, dramatic is the word, actually. Thank you.
yeah, that's a fair point.
It's all for effect. We have fun here in the pod. But day two tonight, I'm excited for the Patriots to draft at least a receiver or an offensive tackle. Day three, we just rattled off all those prospects. Drake May is going to be in the building. Time to go see him and say hello and ask him more questions. The Patriots do franchise quarterback. It's a great day. Who knows what the results will be. The draft is not about results. This is about hope. Patriots have a quarterback prospect. You can hope again. I would encourage everyone to relish in that and do it as long as you can, because this kid has got special talent, and hopefully the Patriots can bring it out.
Yeah, just pop on the YouTube highlights of the good ones. Just watch him make the throws. They'll get you excited. It'll take you all the way to training camp, and then you can see it for yourself in person. And again, there'll be some bad ones too, but like, live on the good ones for now.
Just watch him make all of the throws.
Yes. You're welcome, sir.